Amazingly enough, in the last 3 years, there seems to be an average of 9 train derailments per month. I mean, 9 per month. And this is according to a study by the Sightline Institute. So what are the, I mean, obviously, a train derailment with an oil train, I mean, that can be very dangerous. But, I mean, give us some specifics on what has happened and what else can happen.
In terms of, well, like I mentioned before, right. I mean, the most notorious incident was in Quebec, Canada, where 47 people died in an oil train explosion. And that happened July 6th of last year. That one-year anniversary is almost upon us. I mean, when you're talking about the Bakken oil shale, you're talking about a process to remove and transport and then burn massive amounts of oil, which I don't think our planet can handle in this era of climate change. And so those oil cars themselves are highly dangerous. They can explode. They could spill in the Columbia River. Any number of like imminent threats from the oil by rail itself, but ultimately we're talking about catastrophic climate crisis if that oil is burned.
Oh, Emma, I only have a little time left, and I really appreciate you coming down again. I had two questions, and I'll try to combine them. One, I think some of our listeners might be asking themselves, what are the alternatives to oil and coal that Rising Tide promotes? And then if people want to get involved with Portland Rising Tide, how can they do that?
Well, absolutely. I think that your first question is really such a long one. I mean, I think that we can transition to, we are the human society that consumes the most resources ever on this planet. There are plenty of alternatives in every other human society that has ever existed. Portland Rising Tide, check us out on the internet, check us out on Facebook, come to our meetings. We're looking for people to get involved. This is really the first of many actions this summer. And thank you so much for having me on.
No, thanks, Emma.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. We've been speaking with Emma from the Portland Rising Tide, who was part of the action this morning that shut down the ARC Logistics crude oil terminal for about 4 hours. So thank you, Emma. And good night, Ken.
Good night, Rosalyn. Good night, Danielle.
This is Mary Graham. My husband, Donnie Graham, after being down 20 years in prison, was shot and killed by the Clackamas County Sheriff. My 4 beautiful daughters were taken by the state. I turned to drugs to ease the pain. Listen to my story of healing and hope on Prison Pipeline.
That's Prison Pipeline, June 30th at 6:30 p.m.
Community Radio is looking for an IT contractor to work with our organization 15 hours a week at $25 an hour, providing on-site IT support as well as website maintenance support. Essential qualifications include at least 5 years of general IT network and server maintenance and website administration, experience with PHP, MySQL, experience in Drupal 6 and 7, ability to maintain rack-mounted server, and maintain a local area network of Windows XP, 7, and 8 workstations. Send a resume and cover letter addressing the above qualifications and the question, why KBOO is important, to hiring@kboo.org or drop it off for IT Hiring Team at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. More information can be found at kboo.fm/hiring.
KBOO Board of Directors elections are coming up. We are currently looking for board candidates with skills in finance, new media, and nonprofit development. If this sounds like you or someone you know, you can download a copy of the board candidate package at kboo.fm. You can also get a copy by coming by KBOO in person at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The deadline to turn in your application for the KBOO Board of Directors is midnight on July 30th. Thank you for supporting your grassroots, listener-powered community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KABU is proud to co-sponsor and broadcast live from the 2014 Safeway Waterfront Blues Festival. The 27th annual festival will take place July 3rd through the 6th, 2014, at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. It will feature Greg Allman, Los Lobos, Lee Fields, and The Expressions among the 100-plus acts that will perform over the four-day festival. The 27th annual Waterfront Blues Festival will benefit the Oregon Food Bank. More information on artists, tickets, and the KABU broadcast of the festival can be found at KABU.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening. Labor Radio is brought to you this evening by your co-host, me, Lane Ponce, and...
Michael Morrow.
And we have one guest with us this evening, the pleasant and brilliant Susan Stoner, who is going to be talking about some of her books and a new book that just came out. So let's start off with some announcements. Michael, you had some announcements for things that are coming up in the future?
In the near future, I would like to put in a plug. LURC, as I'm sure most of our listeners know, is down at the University of Oregon, the Labor Education and Research Center. And every summer with the AFL-CIO, they put on a summer school program. It is always at the very beginning of August. This year, it's August 1, 2, and 3. I was just down at the U of O for graduation 2 weeks ago, and there is building going on down there. So for folks maybe who have been to this, it's been at the U of O for years, but not for a while. It could be interesting just to go down and check out what's happening at the U of O. It is, again, August 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. You can reach them if you're interested. Here is the website. It is LURC, L-E-R-C, .uoregon.edu. That's LURC, L-E-R-C, .uoregon.edu. Some of the workshop titles, and if I were not going to be at a different conference in New York City, I would certainly be there for this one. Gearing Up, A Guide to What's at Stake in the 2014 Election, All in the Family, Orienting, Welcoming, and Involving New Members. Together We Can, Oregon's Strong Voice in Labor Community Engagement. Here's one, Putting Our Money Where Our Values Are, The Politics of Revenue in Oregon. Another interesting one for those of you who go to more meetings than you would like, The Seven Sins of Deadly Meetings and How to Overcome Them. So these are just some of the many workshops that they're going to be putting on and be very interesting. So I do hope some of our listeners can make it down to Eugene for that.
Have you attended any of those, Michael?
I've been to 3 or 4.
Yes.
They'll put you in the dorms. So for those who have not enjoyed the experience of college dorms, or maybe remember them fondly, this could be a unique opportunity.
Susan, have you attended any of those?
No, I have not.
I think you have a rather busy schedule, I would guess.
Yeah, I have done other LURC things, but not down at the U of O. They do some in Portland as well, so I've gone to those.
I went through the leadership courses and attended many of them. It was very, very, they're very professional in their delivery of all the information, history of labor unions and activism. It's a very good program. And it's also, it was started by Nellie Fox many years ago. She was very instrumental in getting that accomplished. So this evening, Susan L. Stoner, our author, and you also have a part-time job as well as author. What is your part-time job? About 60 hours a week, is it?
Yes. I'm a labor union attorney for the Amalgamated Transit Union, which are the folks that drive the TriMet buses and Salem, Eugene, a number of places, and also a couple towns, Vancouver and Walla Walla and Washington.
Oh, so, and how long have you been doing that?
Since 1991 as in-house counsel, and before that I was outhouse counsel, and that was since 1988.
That's an unusual term, isn't it? Outhouse
not,
counsel.
Not in the books.
No.
Did you have any questions of
I just wanted to say, in addition to the other hats that Susan wears, she is, and I hesitate to use this term, an amateur historian. I learned so much about the history of the Portland area and the history of Oregon from reading her books, and I've read all four, and I'm looking forward to talking to you about the current one and the one that's in the works. So,
well, I'm really glad that you kind of pick up on that, because I was a research assistant for Charles Tracy. He was a professor at Portland State, and he got me started on historical research, and I discovered it was thrilling. It's absolutely thrilling. But on the other hand, usually reading history books can be kind of boring. So this is an attempt to make learning history painless but very accurate historical facts. So I'm glad that you
So you wrap it around that. A murder mystery.
Yes.
Clever idea. And this the newest book called Black Drop, out now, available at Powell's and other bookstores, I'm sure.
Yeah, everywhere, pretty
everywhere,
much.
Involves an actual visit Teddy Roosevelt made to Portland in the spring of 1903.
That's right. That's right. And it's a lot of it, if I can talk just a moment about that book, I was able to research at the Library of Congress, and I was able to research Portland City Archives and then also the Oregon Historical Society, which is all kind of home base for me. And it was really interesting to be able to weave actual things that happened into the story. And a lot of it is, especially when the day he gets to Portland, and there's quite a description about him arriving and everything that's happening. That's all straight out of the newspaper and the detective's notebooks that were generated during that time.
Well, Susan, why don't we back up a little and start with the first book you wrote, the second book, the third book, and this one about Roosevelt, which is very interesting, and your future one. Because I think if we start with the first one, which was Timber Beasts.
Yes.
The characters are introduced to us. This is known as the Sage Adair Historical Mystery Series. So tell us about your first series and how you decided to get those characters on the road.
Well, Sage Adair is someone who's working as basically an undercover operative for the labor movement. He was raised in Appalachia, but through a circumstance, he ended up part of his life being raised by a rich mine owner. And ended up rich himself because he went to the Klondike during the Klondike Gold Strike, which was the latter half of the 1800s. And anyway, but he never forgot his roots in Appalachia. And so he wanted to have social and economic justice. And I picked that time period of the early 1900s because it is so much in parallel with what's happening today, in the sense that in the United States in the early 1900s, there was power was getting concentrated, wealth was getting concentrated, there was great gap in equality between the richest and the poorest in the country. And so it's kind of what's happening worldwide now.
It sounds very familiar to today's life and times.
And there's a rise, you know, nationally, it was the rise of the progressives who gave us most of what made America great in the world. And now, of course, we have the rise of popular movements all over the world, and a creation of what I think is a worldwide ethic, hopefully.
And so you've stepped back into history to bring us up to date.
Kind of, yes.
We're speaking this evening with Susan L. Stoner, who is an author and a labor attorney, and we are at KBOO, and it is now about halfway through our show, and we'll continue with discussing her books. And we do have call-in opportunities if you had specific questions you wanted to ask Ms. Stoner. Our call-in number is 503-231-8187. I'll repeat that, 503-231-8187. And now we'll move from Timber Beast, where the characters start up, and you give us you have several characters that appear so far in all four books, right?
Yes, yes.
And the next book up was
Land Sharks.
Land Sharks, okay. Tell us a little about Land Sharks.
Well, Timber Beast was about the timber frauds that went on in Oregon. Land Sharks is about how the wealthy in Portland benefited from Shanghai, and Shanghai was when people were forced to basically be slaves on sailing ships that ended up heading first to China and would circumnavigate the globe. So Land Sharks is about that. And then Dry Rot is about a labor union strike of bridge carpenters and what is known as honest graft and dishonest graft, municipal. And that one was interesting because after I wrote it, I discovered that they were striking in the book for an 8-hour day, and it turns out the carpenters in Portland struck at the same time for an 8-hour day. And in the book and in real life, they both won. So that was a good thing.
Congratulations on winning. Yeah. That I found that one really interesting. They were all very interesting. The dry rot was very interesting to me because when you're driving through Portland, you don't really realize you're going across bridges or over gullies. And this book really pointed out how many gullies and really huge crevices in the terrain that had to be maneuvered across for reasons for making money and development of the city.
Yeah, I was amazed at that too, and I was fortunate and got my hands on a early map, and there were at least 50 bridges that were across ravines and things like that.
Little ravines, not just the yeah. Willamette, but little
right
streams around here and there all over the city.
And swamps. There was a lot of swamp. So
those folks who are lucky enough to travel up and down I-5 every day as you're coming into Portland, all the construction work that's been done now and is thankfully coming to an end. As you're driving past that construction work on I-5 just south of town, you might look to your right, look uphill, and there's a trestle. And apparently, you know, those sorts of trestles used to be profligate throughout the city. And this book talks about those, talks about some of the shenanigans that went into the construction of them, and some of, you know, hence the title Dry Rot. And it was a very interesting historical look at Portland. I thought it was very interesting.
And all of them take place in the early 1900s.
Yes.
And most, these are all centered in Portland.
Yes. In fact, the last book, it's really so far the four books are in the span of 11 months. So
busy.
Yes.
Sage Adair was a very busy
He's young.
Union activist, wasn't he?
Yes.
And he ran a very exclusive high-end restaurant.
Yes.
That was his front.
That was his front.
Is his front.
And what was interesting is, of course, after I started the series, I discovered that, in fact, there was a kind of an exclusive high-end restaurant that was a hangout of sort of the moneyed liberal elite in Portland. And I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to learn.
You also went into some of the black population that worked in the Portland Hotel.
Yes.
And the Portland Hotel is... What? Where Myron Franks and...
It's now what, Portland's Living Room?
Portland's Living Room, right.
Yes. It was a parking lot when I was growing up in Portland, but before that it was the Portland Hotel, and it was at one point the most exclusive hotel on the West Coast.
And they imported people, black waiters and staff, from the East Coast to work in the hotel.
From the Carolinas, yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, is there something, which one did you enjoy doing the research for, or is it equal?
It's all equal. I get caught up in it, and I spend the whole time fascinated by what I'm discovering.
I think that comes true through very clearly in your
yeah,
work. It's... And I appreciated the fact that you have a lot of historical notes at the end. So if there's something you, did this really happen? You can turn to the back of the book and get a little more information
yes.
about what you based those things on.
And you'll notice in the last one, that's the longest historical notes. They go on forever because there was so much in that particular book,
yes.
which is about Teddy Roosevelt. And if I can talk a little bit about that, Blackdrop introduced me to Teddy Roosevelt, and I had always thought of him as sort of a warmongering guy that liked to wave his rifle and shoot animals, and that was it. And Michael Monk, who does the Portland Red Guide, a book that I recommend, he told me, you need to really read about Roosevelt. So that's what I did, and I was amazed and came away believing he was probably one of the greatest presidents that we ever had, and he was one of the most progressive, and the bravest, and he definitely deserves to be on Mount Rushmore. And he did so many firsts. He was the first president to invite a black man to the White House socially. He had Booker T. Washington come, and there's even some thought that Booker T. Washington might have been Roosevelt's very first guest in the White House. Caused a huge uproar in Congress. One Southern senator said they were going to hang 1,000 blacks to put them before they would get back in their place where they belonged. He was a guy who was very much into conservation. On his way to Portland, he spent 5 days camping in the woods with John Muir, the head of the Sierra Club. He was the first to actually make an effort to break the monopoly of the trusts, and he took on, he didn't start with a little trust like the sugar trust, he started with the railroad trust, which was the biggest one out there. He was the first president to actually call out the National Guard to help union folks who were on strike, the miners, and he forced the mine owners into binding arbitration, which resulted in a raise in wages. He was the first to openly use a woman as an advisor, Jane Addams, and he called her to D.C., and she visited the White House, and he consulted her on lots of things. He was the first to also have Catholics in the cabinet. They called him, there was a complaint that he had incense swingers, too many incense swingers around him. I mean, he did what he thought was right, and he was very out front, and you know, he had a lot of confidence. He was really smart. That's the other thing about him I didn't realize. He was he could have been a scientist, and he was a naturalist, and he was very good, and he wrote a lot of books, and most people don't realize that either. So he started the Food and Drug Administration, checking, for the quality of food, requiring labeling of what was in all these patent medicines that people were consuming, and he was the first international person to try to stop the opium trade.
He was busy.
He was very busy. He was the alternative to William Jennings Bryan. He was afraid because of the inequality in the country, there was going to be a revolution, and so he definitely moved towards the progressive end of the spectrum and really tried to implement a lot of things. And Congress hated him. The rich people hated him. Didn't matter if it was his party. Even though he was a Roosevelt, and he was a
traitor
a Republican,
to his class, isn't that?
He was a traitor to his class.
They were always saying about the Roosevelts, "You're a traitor to your class."
So what he did is he said, I'm going out and talk to the people. I'm taking my case and my view out to the people. And he did a 14,000-mile train trip around he mostly focused on the West. And he talked off of the back of trains and sort of said, you gotta look at a man's heart and soul, not what their color is, not what their money is, not what their education is. And he really resonated with the common people and got the support.
In this book, this is the first book that you've started each chapter with a very pertinent quote from your favorite now, Theodore Roosevelt. That was a very nice technique. I enjoyed reading those little excerpts. That was a nice approach to each chapter.
For those who get into interesting discussions on their Facebook pages with folks who disagree with them politically and who would like to hear what a Republican had to say about the early union movement and about other interesting aspects of politics these days, the quotes that you've selected for your 35 or 36 chapters, and some of them are fairly short, mm-hmm. but they're absolutely, I don't want to say pro-union. I'll say pro-union. He believed in his heart that, and he used these terms. He said that capital and corporations are so powerful that working people also need the right to organize. And I think that's appropriate given today's Supreme Court decision. So 110 years ago, here was a Republican saying that, by gosh, people, working people really need the right to join together to protect themselves in their working situations. And now we've got five members of the Supreme Court disagreeing with that.
And I agree. I was shocked to discover that he actually did feel that corporations had to be and the wealthy had to have regulations, because if they didn't, they were going to basically be amoral in how they dealt with people. And he saw unions as the only really counterbalance to that. And I didn't know that. That was a real shocker to me. You know, you wonder, what did you learn in school?
Really? Did we learn any of that in school? I don't think so.
We learned about San Juan Hill.
That's exactly it.
Rough Riders.
That's exactly it.
Which gives you that whole mental image of him.
Which was a tiny piece of his life.
Yes.
A very tiny piece.
And I think now we're aware that he was doing natural conservation things with the parks, because there's been some shows around that issue. So we do know, we're getting to know him a little more, but this book really is a nice introduction to Mr. Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Well, Susan, what's up next?
I'm researching a book I'm currently calling Deadline, and it's about Central Oregon. It takes place around Prineville in June of 1903, and it has to do with the sheep and cattle range war, land fraud again, and it also for me. So I was born and raised in Oregon. We did go to Central and Eastern Oregon sometimes, but not that much. And I feel like I really missed out a lot because it's a different place. Fabulous history, epic history, and the people who live there were just amazing. What they managed to triumph over is just has blown my mind, really. Just trying to squeeze all that into something where you read it and you don't realize you're learning history is a little harder.
Well, you've done it in four books, so I look forward to that. And being from Central Oregon, Bend, which is a little different than Prineville, they have different backgrounds for sure, but I'm looking forward to that, because there's, even though I grew up there, there's a lot I don't know. So I'm looking forward to see what your research brings up to us. And what about the covers that you've selected for your books?
These covers are done by Alec Dunn. He's known as Icky. He used to live here in Portland. He he's an anarchist, but he's also a nurse now in Pittsburgh. And he's also a musician, and he has a band that he comes back and plays with periodically. So he still has strong ties with Portland. I don't know enough about art to say what the style is, but I can guarantee nobody else has covers like this.
They're almost like graphic novel covers a little bit. They're kind of cartoon characters, but they're very appropriate to the text that we're reading about, and they're similar enough that you know you've got a set. I'm looking forward to having a set of 5, 6, 7. What do you think?
I don't know. I'm working on 5, 2 more chapters, and I'll have a draft done.
So you have 4 books out. How long have you been working on these? What was your, it seems like you're doing one a year or something.
I'm putting out one a year. I was just looking at that. I think the research takes a couple, it's probably 2 years in the making. But the real writing of it, I might research for 6 months, 8 months, and then the writing, the story just starts kind of naturally evolves.
So it sounds like you didn't start out the same way J.K. Rowling did, where I'm going to write 7 books over this period of time, and I know where I'm going to start, and I know where I'm going to finish.
Oh, no.
You just sat down and said, I'll do a little research and write a book, and then the next one happened.
Well, and it's sort of serendipitous how it turns out. Something like I might go to the Historical Society and put an old newspaper on, and that's how dry rot happened. I turned it on, the very first front page said, city bridges collapsing, wagons falling into you know, and I went, ooh, that'd be a good
That's
story.
That's a book.
And it is. It is a good story. Dry Rot is a very good story. Well, Susan, I think our evening is coming to a close. Your books are available at all outlets, Powell's and other places, and you also have a website. Is that right?
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of. Under your name, Susan L. Stoner? Is that where we can find
no,
you?
No, it's actually under Yamhill Press. But if you just look for, if you just type in Sage Adair, a lot comes up.
And it's a very charming name, don't you think? Sage Adair. It's a detective I want to know.
And can we give away Sage's real name?
Oh, John Sagacity Adair.
Right.
Sagacity. Yeah. Where'd you come up with that name?
You know, I don't know. It's like half the books.
Okay.
I don't know.
We are wrapping up for this evening, and we hope that you all turn in to KBOO every Monday between 6 and 6:30 for Labor Radio. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Susan, thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Hello out there, this is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio, 90.7 on your FM dial, unless your FM was made in America.
KBOO Community Radio proudly co-sponsors the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on Thursday, July 17th from 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. at Holocene, located at 1001 Southeast Morrison. This fundraiser opens with an ocean art show and silent auction, followed by a screening of the surf film Seven Signs. Then the reggaetronic five-piece band Everyday Prophets takes center stage at 10 p.m. Again, that's the Surf Rider Summer Soiree on July 17th. More information may be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is looking for an IT contractor to work with our organization 15 hours a week at $25 an hour.